back, everybody, to we're going to call this the recovery episode of the Be Petter podcast. We've never, you know, we've been working steadily on increasing our reps and volume and intensity for, what, 5 years now, Devin? How long have we been doing this?
It's been quite a sustained effort since you brought me on board.
It has. So we've been, we have not had a rest week. We have not had a down week. And I feel with some of the things that have happened to us that we will go into, we deserve a recovery week, a down week, or a down episode, recovery episode, because good periodization always has that. How do you think that's necessary?
You know, my coaching methodology is to find that moment when you're tired. That's when you need to push.
Just
so
lean
into it.
I disagree.
I think when you're down, you need to
grind it out.
That's the only way. I'm a real David Goggins head, you know?
Oh, my gosh. So let's put this in a little bit of perspective for everybody. Last episode, for those of you that listened or did not listen or whatever you choose to do, I think we really showed our failure in preparation and how we, number one, failed to recognize the men's professional race in France.
Oops. Ironman World Championship happened without any acknowledgement from this triathlon allegedly podcast.
I know. Well, you know, we're more than just triathlon, right? So that might have been the precursor. And in the meantime, since this happened, Devin, you ran the Twin Cities Marathon this past weekend.
The Medtronic Twin Cities Marathon.
Yes, the TCM, the 40th anniversary of it, the 2025 edition. I was able to call you at the beginning and at the end as well.
You were on the call. I was not called up.
No.
There was no introduction specifically for me.
No.
There's no, oh, and stepping to the front, Devin Palmer, Remax results, a future four-hour marathon finisher. Come to the front, Devin.
You had prepared a ton for this, and coming into it, you had, and like in the last week, you had told me you kind of had an injury that kind of came up and caused a little bit of, I don't want to say concern, but like, you know, when your training had been very consistent, had gone very well. And and when something at the end kind of changes the game for you a little bit, that affected you a bit. Can you talk a little bit about, like, number one, what it was, two, kind of like what your mindset was and how you approached going into the race?
I keep it boring. I have progressed since I shifted to a run focus in the fall of 2024. I had this event as a goal in mind. I progressed literally inch by inch. I set out my weekly rhythm of four runs and three rides a week. It wasn't until December of 24 that I even hit an 8 mile long run.
Yeah.
So I just progressed it inch by inch by inch by inch. And I worked up through this spring. I was hitting 12 and 13 mile runs very consistently. And over the course of the summer, I ventured higher and did a few 15s, a few 16s, and then a total of 3 18s. So it was very consistent, very boring. Because I stagger in the biking, and so I'm not really – I try to allocate the time to take off my feet and keep from getting injured, because that's the problem with running.
Yep.
And I come from triathlon, obviously, so I'm used to let's feather in the biking as supplemental aerobic work and stay off the feet a few days a week, especially now being older and heavier.
Yep.
So I took a very conservative approach. I built very, 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 very slowly, repeating the same week over and over and over again before progressing my long run again. So very good, steady progress. I worked my way up, I think, in a very balancing urgency to get to 18-mile runs to prepare for the marathon, but not rushing there to incur excess risk.
Yeah.
1 month out, I ran the City of Lakes half. It was great. I ran as best I possibly could have expected, felt really strong, really enjoyed it. Take Monday off. Tuesday, do my normal 6-mile loop. Thursday, do my normal 8-mile loop. I'm such a creature of habit, my consistency kicks in, and I do my 8-mile loop with the same intense session that I'd done maybe the 6 weeks prior.
Okay.
Oh, okay, I feel okay enough, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
Which is just 3x1 mile strong.
Okay.
Nothing fancy.
No.
Number one, fine. Number two, fine. Number three, 2.5 minutes into my third repetition, my calf gives out. So it clinches up pretty quickly. I walk for a while, and I'm able to jog home. So I call it a strain or a severe cramp. Something happens with my calf, a light injury to my calf, sustained about 4 weeks prior to the marathon.
Got it.
I'm able to keep running a little bit, so I take a day off. I run very short and easy the following day. I run a limp through a medium run shortly after. Within a week of that injury, I'm able to do a final 18-miler.
Okay.
So injury sustained, keep it very light, keep moving, able to sneak in one more 18 miler. So I'm feeling back normal, call it 2 weeks out, and then 1 week prior to the marathon, I try a new pair of the same shoes.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, I'll get a fresh set of shoes for the marathon. I'll have a week to break them in. It's the same shoe. It's the ASICS Gel Nimbus.
Yeah.
But it's likely a slightly different model year.
Okay. But a very sound theory.
Pretty good thinking. Not going to a super shoe, not changing completely, nope. Not going back to a Newton.
Yep.
I restrain the calf on that. I debuting the new shoe on a short, easy run.
Yeah.
Restrain the calf.
Oh, no. That's not good.
So I just limped through the last week.
What's your mind feeling when that first comes in? You know it's a week out. What's it like? Because, you know, a lot of athletes, especially, you know, older athletes, are deal with some sort of, like, injury in the midst of training for a large goal.
Yep.
And the struggle has always been, like, the mindset. You know, the body can recover, but the mind is one of those things. What is your mindset when that first happens, when you're out on the road? What's the first thing that goes through your head?
4 weeks out, there's a lot of uncertainty. Because if I have to abandon running and can't run for 4 weeks leading in, that's a big problem to actually get through the marathon.
Yeah.
So that when the injury first flared up, ton of uncertainty. I would say now versus 10 years ago, I took a more measured and calm approach. You know, you have all the panicky thoughts. Oh, is it all for naught? Is it all done? You know, like, so you have that. I put that all aside. Like, okay, let's just approach it as calmly as we can. Get in to see my chiropractor right away. Do all the modalities I can to help accelerate recovery. And the one thing I'll say I did that I may not have done in the past, I got a little more focused on my diet.
Okay.
So I said, okay, we're 4 weeks out.
Yep.
If I'm going to get through the marathon, the worst possible thing I could do is get discouraged, eat a little indiscriminately, and add 3, 5, 8 pounds.
So you threw away all the chunky monkey.
Long term, I'm very happy. I made the slight shift, but it's like, all right, let's get back on intermittent fasting and recut out breakfast, which I'd gotten loosey-goosey on intermittent fasting. Let's get back on that, and let's really tone down the sugar, a.k.a. just stop eating dessert.
Okay.
So instead of being injured and suddenly gaining weight, I was like, oh, let's just be injured and deal with that and at least feel good going in.
Yeah, maintain.
So I had all the ups and downs, all the uncertainty. And every run, you're like, oh, is it going to go back? Is it going to be normal?
Yep.
The flare-up a week out was really frustrating because you think you're over the hill. You think, oh, I've gotten through it. You know, I am going to be fine for this race. And then the uncertainty comes right back, and there's no time to adjust. So it was – I limped through one more 10-miler the Sunday before. The discomfort was still really aggressive on
– Were you limping, or is this like a hypothetical limping, just kind of like a metaphorical type of you just kind of didn't do as well as you normally would have?
That – the 10-miler 1 week out, I was not truly limping in, like, I altered my gait dramatically. I think it was unsafe. It would be unsafe at that point to do 10 miles really altering your gait because you're going to set yourself up to tweak something else.
100%.
So that I just had to go so slow to keep under a threshold of letting the calf be okay. Yep. So if I went slow enough, it was okay. So it was a humbling, like, oh, nothing takes the wind out of your sails like going super slow for less distance than you think.
Yep, 100%.
I cut out, I skip running from Tuesday till Saturday. Saturday I tried running again. So it's like, for me being a creature of consistency, the benefit is it's easy for me to do my training because I enjoy it and it's part of my weekly rhythm. The weakness is when you take that away from me, I need it.
Yeah,
so it's like I'm missing a couple of runs in there.
And this is race week too,
this is
right?
Race week.
Yeah, this is the times when you're like in the dial-in countdown.
And again, versus in the past that may have affected me more because there may have been more performance pressure in the past. Now I'm like, okay, I had a very boring year, a very consistent routine.
Yep.
So I had it in the bank, and this missing one run on Thursday, missing a couple runs won't dramatically affect my outcome on Sunday.
Yep.
So I was able to manage it better now as I'm a little more mature than I would have 10 or 15 years ago.
Did work and family help in kind of like the quieting of the voices?
Yeah, because you got stuff to do.
Like, so
it doesn't matter. You finish the run, you still have to go shower, get ready for work, deliver the kids to where they need to be, and then go sell some houses. So
three kids yelling at you, buyers and sellers all knocking on your door and pinging your phone. That helped kind of quell some of the voices inside your head that were talking to you about performance.
15 years ago, when performance was all I had, because I was trying to rely on it financially, emotionally, it's all I had. My whole esteem in life was pinned on my triathlon performance.
Yeah.
There's nothing in my day-to-day that balanced it out.
Okay.
So it was, this would have been much trickier to deal with mentally 15 years ago when I was in the thick of it in triathlon versus now. Yeah, obviously family dominates my day.
Yep.
And then work is my, you know, work's completely separate from this.
Yeah.
So I have a lot more points of esteem and points of other things to get done.
Yeah.
And the chores around the house don't do themselves.
They don't do themselves.
So it was easier to balance it now than it would have been in the past.
Okay.
For sure, for sure.
So Sunday morning comes. How are you feeling when you wake up?
Felt fine. Did my expected pre-race stuff. My mommy drove me down to the start. I hear it's so funny. It's like
my mommy.
Mommy drives me to the race, just like it would have been in high school. And then here's Chris on the mic, just like it would have been a triathlon. So it's like, oh, this is comforting.
This is like you had all these safety blankets.
Oh.
All these little warm blankets. Yeah. So you show up. What corral were you in?
Corral one.
Oh, nice. Very nice. So you were right up in the beginning. So interesting. So
I started at the back crawl one because I would rather be always be rather mentally I'd always rather be moving forward and
yeah.
Also I know like okay it's, there's a little uncertainty I'd rather not be amongst people who are going to run a 3:15 when I know I'm going to run a 3:45 and
very smart.
Yep,
very smart.
So started at the back crawl one.
All right, so the race starts off. How long do you go before you start to get the niggles?
I run the 2 miles out of downtown. Tell me if I'm making this up. Is this a crackpot theory? I'm running and just feeling normal. I'm just in the mix of the people with me in the corral, and my Garmin is telling me, you're running 9:50s.
Yeah, that's not right.
And I didn't quite think it was right, but I was like, oh, I'm going too slow. So for the first 2 miles while we're in downtown there, I think the GPS may get a little distracted by the skyscrapers.
Most likely, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things, whether it's pinging form. I'm not sure if satellites have bandwidth like Wi-Fi, where like you get a bunch of people in a small area if it doesn't become as accurate. But most likely what it can be as well is if it's starting to ping irregularly and it's not. And so you're not getting waypoints hitting, you know, the normal, like, you know, every 2 seconds or 3 seconds. It's now going maybe 15 seconds. And so it's having to average things out. So there's a lot of different reasons. But yes, all the buildings can create issues too.
Whichever crackpot theory is correct in this case, I for sure had a Garmin problem. So after about mile two, coming out of downtown, then turning off Hennepin and into the Lowry Hill neighborhood, I was like, oh, so I scooted up just a little bit. And so I settled then into a rhythm, my 8:15s, 8:20s, like right where I wanted to be. And it's like, oh, great, this feels comfortable. So I did those through mile seven, coming around the north side of Harriet, passed through one more aid station. Then coming on the east side of Harriet, headed south towards the parkway.
Yeah.
The calf said, hey. Hey there.
Hi. How are you? Remember me?
Hey. Yeah.
Gave you a little wave.
So I was a little disconcerted, like, okay, this is a long way to go. If the calf is going to be a serious problem, I may have to drop out. So I spent a lot of miles in a state of uncertainty, like, will this progressively get worse? Can I keep going and finish this out? I knew it would be easy to see my old neighbors around Nokomis here.
Mm-hmm.
So in your neck of the woods here, like, okay, this is a great dropout point if I have to drop out because it's drivable.
Yep.
And then I can find an old neighbor and borrow a phone and call them and get a rescue.
You could stop over at Fat Lorenzo's and grab a slice and get a payphone.
So it didn't degenerate. It was like, all right, if I go, again, like the run the week prior, if I go slow enough, I can just keep muddling my way through. So I muddled my way through the rest of this stupid marathon.
What was your original goal that you had set out in your head that you wanted to hit?
I knew a 3:40-ish was the anchor point. If I had a killer day, I would be maybe a 3:35. And if I had a pokey day, maybe a 3:45. If I really had a bad day, 3:50, 3:55.
Okay. And what was your end result?
4 hours and 4 seconds.
There you go.
A palindrome, a clean palindrome of a time.
It was. It was 4:00:00. Four.
Nice. 4:00:04.
So, yeah. I mean, in all retrospect, an incredibly respectable time and effort that many people would kill and die for.
I don't know that. I don't know how many people would be willing to commit homicide. That'd be a different study. We'd have to collect that data.
You'd be surprised.
But it's
or trip or cheat to get to 4 hours.
Here's where I had that another moment of humbleness versus my prior life. Okay. Visually, as I'm running by, to me, it's embarrassing to be running a 4 hour. In my heart of hearts, it's just embarrassing.
100%, I understand that.
And then I think to myself, well, hey, Devin, visually, like for the people watching or for your kids watching at mile 23 or any of your friends who's going to see you, can they tell a difference between you running a 3:35 pace and you running a 4? Oh, wait, no.
Absolutely
hold
not.
On.
Absolutely not.
Nope.
Does this...
Is there... And I had also had to say, like, oh, it's kind of still in the same category of performance.
It is.
3:35 to 4. Is there prize money? Is there any prize money for you, Devin, as a average male at 3:35? Nope.
Nope.
Is there a coin slot? No. Nope. Is there a Boston slot? Nope. So calm down.
The kids are still proud of you.
Yep. Well, they didn't care. By the time I came through, Chris, they were so clocked out. They just finished fighting. My son had just fallen over. He was sitting in the stroller. They were dunzo by the time I actually came by, and Thea had to quickly take them back and get lunch. So they barely cheered for me.
They get going. So here's my question out,
yes.
out of all this is, does this impact your desire to keep running? Because I know this was kind of, you and I were in a very different parallel, but in kind of the same boat where we both were, you know, kind of came back to running for a number of different reasons. Does this curtail your desire to keep doing it? Or does this not impact that and allows you just to kind of keep going and maybe set another goal to, you know, in 2 years to run another marathon or whatever that might be?
Doesn't deter me at all. It's, again, because there's no performance expectation, there's no reward tied to any of it. I have my own goals. Doesn't deter me one bit. I already signed up for next year.
That's awesome.
So I just looked at the year. It's like, okay, I had a small setback last December.
Yeah.
I overdid it on one run. My body said, no thanks. And I got a tight hamstring. So I had a light hamstring sprain in December of 24. And then I had a calf sprain or whatever I did to my calf this year. I had two setbacks in a year, otherwise really consistent, enjoyable running. So the process, for me, there's no reward in the outcome. So it's the joy of the process. So I really enjoyed the process, and I'm happy to keep building on it going into next year.
I think that's a huge, huge point to make, is that the journey is in, or the joy is in the journey.
Yep.
Right. And if there are reward goals or process goals that you can have, and I think it all depends on the type of person that you are, which fuels you. And you know, for a lot of people, the training is the joy.
Yeah,
and you got so much out of the training too. I mean, you transformed your body. You're so much healthier now.
Yep.
You know, you got a better haircut. You know, a little scruff.
I'm selling more houses this year than last year.
I know you got your little Cotopaxi little vest on. You look so hipster. I'm surprised you don't walk in here with like a macchiato every time.
Oh, I should have a macchiato.
You know,
no,
you
I should
have
a
like
matcha.
A,
you something with matcha.
Something like that. Yeah, you should have that.
Because I've already done, you know, the high-level performances probably that are in the tank for me. I had that chapter of life to do them where it was unfiltered, unfettered, like all performance, let's go. I had that chapter.
Yeah.
I have performance goals still, like I would like to run a sub-3-hour marathon.
Yeah.
I think based on my history, I think that's possible, but I know, especially after this experience, I know, okay, maybe that's not a 2-year process. That might be a 3-year project to get that done.
Yeah.
And there are a variety of other adjustments I'm going to have to make to achieve that.
Yep.
But the joy of it is the day-to-day. So I'm a creature of habit, and I've been doing endurance sports for 22 years now, since about 2003. I just enjoy it. And even though I'm much slower now, I still enjoy the running. So to keep running healthy, if I had to give up racing altogether, I'd gladly do that, or put performance goals aside altogether, I'd gladly do that. To have the 3 or 4 runs I want a week.
I think that is a great mindset. That's kind of the thing I've been struggling with triathlon for a number of years. I'm like, do I want to go back?
Yep.
Do I want to go back and just do one? And the whole thing, and we've talked about this before, is that anonymity would have to be one thing that I'd have to have. Because I mean, the biggest judgment, nobody knows what you're doing. They do, nope. They're like, they're all clapping for you. They're carrying signs. Everybody's, but inside your own head, you're like, man, I'm going so much slower than I could have. And I'm what it, 'cause it's what I used to be. and you're holding that against you.
For both of us, that's the biggest limiter, is comparing to our old selves, and then the feeling of, oh, people are judging me. It's like, first of all, people aren't even thinking about you. People don't care about you.
Yeah, stop being a narcissist. Yeah. And I do it, like, I enjoy us going out riding. Even if you do half wheel me for more than half of the time, it's pushing me a little bit, you know.
Well, in defense, I'm riding so easy, it's hard for me to go slow enough not to half wheel you.
It's true.
How do I say respectfully that you're so slow that I almost fell asleep a couple times?
Well, if you just maybe ride a unicycle next time. But I do enjoy, like, I so much enjoy just you and I going out and riding. And you know, I come home and Jill's like, oh, how was your ride? It's like, it's never a bad one. Yep. Unless I get hit by a freaking car or a train, it's never a bad ride. No matter how much I might be blown apart or tired, there's like conversation, camaraderie, and fellowship that comes from that. And the training is the reward, not like a t-shirt or a medal.
What's the training that gives you the mental boost and the enjoyment? It's the training that gives you the week-to-week weight management and health benefits. It's
absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, hopefully you're feeling better. Are you feeling better now?
I'm limping around slightly. My calf is still...
I don't know what that's like.
Still, you wouldn't know. My calf is a little achy.
Yeah.
But I'd say I'm really excited for next year. I'm really excited to keep the momentum going and being responsible with other elements that go along with it, like managing my, being a little bit less gluttonous with dessert and managing behaviors I know that will make me healthier and probably make me a better dad anyway. So I'm on it.
I think it's great. I'm in a very similar boat than you are, but from a different perspective.
Well, yeah. Why don't you tell the listener, for the listener who can't see how laid up you are.
Listeners, there's more than one.
For Jim and Frank here.
for Jake and Wally. So Sunday night, we're talking here. It's a Wednesday, right? Wednesday. It is October 8th that we're talking. Sunday night, I played recreational hockey for a long time, and I have enjoyed doing that. Sunday night, I was the recipient of what is commonly known as a slew foot. Now, do you know what a slew foot is?
I do not.
So a slew foot is where a player will drag his leg and hit another player's leg in order to kind of like knock him down or knock him off his balance. I was caught by another player coming from my right to come around me, caught my left leg, and my left leg went out from underneath me, and I fell. And as I was spinning in a counterclockwise motion, my left knee basically went in to a point, and my leg and calf went out in an unnatural way. And I've actually got it on Live Barn. So
you've sent me the video. I had to watch it six times to try and understand what's going on. It was not a pirouette you did. It was not graceful. There was nothing elegant here.
It hurt.
You just dropped.
Yeah, and if you slow it down, you actually see like just the amount of strain that the knee went to. Mm-hmm. And so when it happened, I immediately knew something was wrong.
Yep.
And I asked you about like what went through your mind. For me, I had extremes go through my mind. I thought, okay, torn ACL. I blew out my knee. I hyperextended. I didn't know because I had like a weird feeling and sense of pain that I had not felt before. And I was immobilized. I mean, I couldn't move. I had a hard time breathing. There was a lot of things that were going on there. Was able to, get up and get off the ice. Had Cole come to the rink and took me. I went to Methodist to the ER because I didn't know, like, did I break the tip of my, like my femur? I didn't know what was going on. So go to the ER.
When you don't have, especially with a murky joint like the knee,
you don't know.
Have the feedback of something is amiss here, but you don't know if it's an emergency that requires emergency surgery or if it's just like, it's a little strained.
Don't have indi- And so I needed to knock that out. And since it's Sunday night, you can't get to an orthopedist. You can't get to TRIA. You can't get to TCO. So immediately went to the ER. They did all the scans. I had movement in my knee up and down. They did like lateral movements, and it was relatively stable and pain-free. So they were like, okay, it's not an ACL. 'Cause that was the first thing I was worried about. I thought I've seen people that blow their ACLs out, and it's not pretty, and it takes a long time. So x-rays came back. All the bones are in the right place, right?
Yep.
You're looking at four major bones that you're looking at, tib, fib, femur, and the meniscus. You're looking to see, are they in the right place? Because if they're not in the right place, then stuff's not holding it where it needs to go. All in the right place. So go home, knee brace, feeling good, or feeling at least somewhat confident that it's like, okay, I'm not going to get a fake knee.
Yep.
Get a replacement. Go to TRIA the next day, and they do the assessments there. Again, feeling that it's not going to be an ACL, but they're like, well, we need to get an MRI to check on the PCL and the MCL, posterior, and also what's the MCL? It's a
medial.
Medial, yeah, medial cruciate ligament. And so those are the two spots. So, but the fact that I have, you know, a decent range of motion, that's been a big piece. A little bit of swelling. There, I actually got, you know, I can get in and out of the shower. I can walk around without the leg brace, but right now it is the thing that's kind of my safety blanket, like a little bit of Charlie Brown syndrome there.
Yep.
I got a cane, so I feel like a real old man. Walked to church today, and everybody's like, "What's going on?" So I show them the little Live Barn video. Couple things that I really kind of took from this. Number one is, I haven't really told a lot of people, but you knew that I had started running again.
Mm-hmm.
And that had been almost like a 4-year break from running because of a back injury that I had and some neuromuscular disconnection I had in my right leg. I had really consciously worked, and I had gotten to a point where I was running twice a week and for 2 miles at a time. And for me, that is
huge,
huge, mm-hmm. huge. You know, I dropped a decent amount of weight. I'm down 25 pounds because of diet and some other things. And so I felt really good. Actually went out and bought a new pair of running shoes last week. I know I committed, right? I felt like I was like in there. And so to have this, I was, you know, this week I was supposed to run on Monday. I would run on Thursday, and now I can, you know, I can hardly walk.
Mm-hmm.
I am going through the struggle of, okay, how am I going to kind of come back to this? I don't want to lose the things that I grabbed onto, which was a pattern of activity that I had missed for a long time. Because, you know, biking's one thing, but running is like, you know, you can do it anywhere. You can do it. You can pick up, go quick. You get more of a bang for your buck from a calorie burn on a shorter time.
20 or 30 minutes on the bike, unless you are doing tempo, versus 20 or 30 minutes just casual run. I mean, it's just night and day.
It is night and day. It was, for me, it was like I started to feel like I was coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had struggled with not being able to do the things that I had settled into. 5 years ago, I could have picked up and you know, run over to Harriet, around Harriet and back without even like thinking about it. Somebody goes, "Hey, you want to go for an hour run?" Yeah, fine. And you could do it, right? And you know, maybe you're running 9s, 9:30s, but at least you're like, you know, that's you're doing fine.
Hey, that's my marathon pace you're talking about.
I know, but that was a different time. But you know, but I purposely had not run with any Strava. The only time I ran once last week with it, just to measure and see what things were looking like, just because I needed to have a little bit of nerd data.
Mm-hmm.
But I was mainly doing it for me. You know, I felt good, and I felt like I was. I wore my underpants run shirt. I was wearing I wore the Miami 70.3 shirt that I had when we went down and did the Miami 70.3 back in the day. And so I was starting to feel like an athlete again.
Mm-hmm.
I was starting to feel like I was out there. But now, you know, I'm sitting here and I got a leg brace on. I'm an impending, I don't know if it's surgery.
Yep.
I don't know what it's going to be. I got to fly here tomorrow. It's Stephanie's wedding this weekend. So I got to walk her down the aisle. You know, and I told her, I sent her the video because I've got the video of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent her the video so she could see. And that was another thing. Live Barn was great when you go and walk into TRIA, and they're like, doctor's like, "So what happened?" I'm like, "Well, let me just show you the video here."
Well, verbally, it's so hard to understand verbally what that is, or how that would look, or, you know, how the impact would go.
You see you see the speed of it, you see the dynamic impact of it, and you see the movement of the leg, where it went and how it's unnatural. You know, it's like watching Joe Theismann's, you know, break his leg.
So you're in a total moment of, again, it's just the uncertainty right now. Is this something that'll be resolve itself organically with a little bit of PT in 6 weeks, or could that be surgery?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? You're still in the influx of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
How does it make you think of beer league hockey, where these kinds of acute incidents are way more possible than like, you know, in our endurance world, acute incidents, acute, you know, bike crashes aside, there's fewer acute things that can go wrong where we could get really hurt. It's chronic things. I had my little chronic thing.
Yeah.
You're now faced with an acute thing.
Yeah. And that's a good question. It becomes a risk reward analysis. And, you know, the person who would probably put my feet to the fire on this would be Jill.
Mm-hmm.
I did, you know, I have notified, and it is the thing that I'm looking at is like, when, how long till I come back? Because it's not just playing beer league hockey, but it's also skating as a coach for, you know, for Julian's team. Cause he started up Bantams yesterday, first practice, and I'm an assistant coach there, not a head coach this year, but I'm being on the ice and being part of my kid's journey through hockey is a huge piece of that. For me, it is like the worst thing that's happened to me in, let's say, 45 years of the game.
Yep.
And I've played at a lot worse, higher levels. If I looked at what was maybe the cause, and I have purposely not put any of this out on social media because the player who hit me is a son of a friend. And I know that he felt bad. And I know that he didn't do it on purpose. And so I didn't want anything to go out there where he's, you know, because if Cole had hit a kid or a guy or a dad that he, because he came out and played, because what happened is when you play, you normally play with people your own age. And when I play, it's no contact. Guys are not really going 50-50 pucks hard. You're deferring to something else. And this was an aggressive move around to try and go for a puck in the contact. In any other realm in that kid's, like, in that kid's space, it would have been normal, right?
Yep.
It would have been a normal thing that happened where he made contact with somebody, but it's a younger player that plays more aggressive, playing against a bunch of older guys that it's like, it's no contact for a reason. I don't wear shoulder pads for a reason. You know, I don't trust two things. I don't trust people that wear shoulder pads, and I don't trust people that wear red helmets, even though I know a guy that wears red helmets is a real nice guy. And Kurt, I'm sorry if you heard this, that you're a real nice guy. But it is one of those things where I attribute it as a very isolated incident because of there were two younger kids that played with us that night that arguably were more aggressive than normally any of the rest of us play. And so I think it's a very isolated incident. So I think, does this change what I want to do? No. Am I eager to go back and skate again? Yeah. I mean, it's one of my motivators to rehab and to get through. I am hoping to be able to play, you know, in my AHA team. So I'm hoping to get back in the mix because hockey's a little bit different, right? We don't have practices, so there's not like training, mm-hmm. but the camaraderie does come in the games, you know, and it's like, that's what you do. You don't practice as an old guy. You mix it up and you play in different things. So I'm looking forward to getting back into that. And it doesn't stop if I want to. I still have the desire. It is a risk reward. It's like my best friend, the best man at my wedding, Mark Kermisch, got clipped on his bike. It destroyed mm-hmm. him. He got T-boned and it didn't stop him from riding a bike.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't stop you from going back out. Other people say, you know, might look at you and go, what the heck are you doing? You know, why would you want to even put yourself into that? But if you went through life looking at the possibility of what could happen, it would be debilitating. You know, walking down the street, anything could happen. Is that going to stop you from walking down the street? No. So what are the things that I might do to try and limit this from happening again? I think being maybe a little bit more aware of who is playing. But I think I've put myself in leagues and in areas that are that this stuff doesn't happen at. I'm not an aggressive player. You know, I do like to do some things, but I haven't been, I'm not the fastest guy out there. I like to set other people up. So I think it's isolated and I will try.
Do they call you Slow Twitch Chris?
They do not call me Slow Twitch Chris. They call me The Grip.
The grip.
No, they don't. Because I hold on to people and never let go. No. Yeah.
Because grab the collar tight before you bash them in the face as an enforcer.
I horse collar people and then pull them back. But it's hard, man. It's tough. It ain't fun being hurt.
Well, let me tell you counterpoint.
Counterpoint.
Risk reward. I've been hit by a car twice while riding, once in 08, once in 2022. 2022, I had only two kids at that time. Now I got three.
Yep.
when I made the shift to run Focus, I pulled back big time from riding outside. And part of it is for efficiency, because if I'm only riding, again, in that 35 to 50 to 60 minute range, it just is more efficient inside.
Yep.
And safety.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm just running the numbers like, okay, it's less time on the road, less opportunities for something just bad to happen, and less chances of me being inadvertently careless and setting myself up for something bad to happen. So I ran the risk reward, and it's like, I'll just watch, you know, silly stuff on YouTube and ride on Zwift for the majority of it. I'm still riding outside. I have a cargo e-bike. I ride the kids to school and around a little bit, and I ride that for work when I can.
Yeah.
But I'm on the road less, a lot of it kind of out of that fear or from that analysis of like, the third time I get clipped, what if it's the time that really gets me?
And that's what you always have to have that in the back of your head. And it's true. I mean, and you and I ride in relatively safe areas.
We ride the riders' routes.
Yep.
Routes that are lower traffic.
Middle of the day, less cars out. We're not like riding Sunday morning when, you know, who knows who's going to clip us or low
and we're
light.
We're not aggressive. We're not barreling through intersections. We're
erring on the side of caution and safety, but it is true. I mean, so it's a good question, but I think the things that I get from playing hockey outweigh the risk of getting hurt.
If this were the fourth incident, or if you were one of the, if you were like, I got concussed for the third time in 18 months.
Yeah, that would.
I would really try and talk you out of it.
It would be, and those would be big pieces. And this being the like you know the largest injury that I've ever sustained in my body, like I have, like I'd say my back injury was a piece, but that was. This is like this. I mean, this is up there, but as a, you know, I'll be 54 in 2 weeks, and so as a 54-year-old guy, I feel like I'm in pretty decent shape, pretty active. I can do a crap ton of things.
Graded on a Gen Z scale, you're doing great.
I'm winning.
You're doing great.
I'm totally winning. Now, what'll be hard is taking out the dock next week. So I just got new waders too, right? So I can't take the dock. So I'll have to get the kids and have some of my friends help me with doing that. My dad will. I don't know if I'll be able to get that, but yeah, I mean, it's now recovery. It's rest, recovery to try and to, because that's, if you think about what are two of the elements of ice or rice, it's rest, ice, compression, elevation. And a lot of that just comes from not moving. Again, I'm basically not eating anything during the day because I'm not burning like squat for calories. So
isn't that, so both of us have to default to that too, like, oh boy, my pathway was like, okay, this might be a big problem, so let me tone it down and not gain weight.
Wait till your kid has a knack for making cookies. Julian makes chocolate chip cookies almost every day. There are chocolate, fresh homemade chocolate chip cookies in our kitchen right now. We went to Costco, and I'm like, I told Jill, stop buying the chocolate sea salt covered caramels and the pretzels with peanut butter inside. If you buy that stuff, I'm going to eat it. I am going to go into total Peter Reed mode. By the way, for those of you that don't know who Peter Reed is, go out and Google Peter Reed. But I'm going to go in total Peter Reed mode, and I'm just basically going to have nothing in the house and go, you know, because if it's there, I'm going to eat it.
Well, especially when you're – part of the reason I like to go work from my office instead of working from the home office is – A, separate myself from distractions, and B, like, when you're around the house, you're so much more likely to graze if it's there.
Oh, 100%. If it's in front of you, you're going to get at it. Mm-hmm. So that's why, I have, it's tough. It's tough not to just eat the little bit. Like, London has breakfast. I'll just have, the rest of her breakfast. Mm-hmm. Like, she didn't have her Nutella bagel, and I'll, like, this is second. It's a bite. It's all it is. But then you remember, those are the steps that go. So, you know, in a normal athlete's down week, we talk about, you know, bringing your caloric intake down in accordance with your activity. Same thing for us.
Yep.
We have to do it, but almost in spades, because our metabolism is not nearly as hyper as an athlete.
Oh, yeah.
Back when we were in our day, there was times when you could sit down and eat a whole pizza and drink a, you know, half gallon of milk, I'm sure, for dinner, and it wouldn't faze you. It wouldn't even come close. I remember on those long Ironman days, training and going out to Turtle Lake and putting in, you know, 7-8 hours, and then hitting Dairy Queen and getting large Coke, triple flame burger, onion rings, a Blizzard, and that didn't even come to touch your caloric burn that you had for the day. Nowadays, oh my God, if I did that, I'd probably die. And that's like, you know, 2 weeks worth of calories right there.
Being mature is the worst.
It sucks.
Oh, just managing things in a mature way is.
I know. It's like being adulting is tough.
It's tough.
Yeah. So we both have that. And I think that's important. And I think there's a lot of lessons that you and I have told people over the years and still tell people that we now have to, we have to eat that crow right now. Or not that crow, but you have to take your own medicine.
Well, especially in that emotional moment, both of us have recently gone through it where there is uncertainty.
Yeah.
And that lack of clarity, like, hey, is this completely going to fall apart or will it be okay? As a coach, you always guide people. And certainly in my work as a realtor, like, yeah, okay, let's clarify. Let's get more answers before we react emotionally. Let's figure out, and then you can make a more educated decision.
Yeah.
Because there's a ton of moments in real estate where it's like, we could react right now, or we could find out a little more. So let's slow down, take the pressure off, find out more, and then make a better decision.
Probably good life lessons there. Yep. I mean, think about all the other things.
Yep.
Panic buying. I mean, man, I tell you, I almost panic bought a whole bunch of stuff on Instagram. I really was like looking at it.
Oh, wow.
Well, I'm dreaming.
The algorithm targets you. This special warming knee brace. Oh, wow.
Well, you know, I'd love to sit in the sauna, but I can't bend my knee to fit in the sauna.
No.
And it's also the exact opposite of what I need. But, you know, yeah, there's like, I did get the Normatex from Paul Phillips.
So okay.
Those are good.
Shout out Paul Phillips.
Paul Phillips, competitive image. He's doing great. Speaking
of race photography,
yes,
looked at the TCM, their race photography they captured of me on the course. You know, they send you the email like, oh, you go buy your race photos, and I look at them like, no, that's not me.
No, can't
that's
be.
A jogger. That's not me. I don't know who that is.
No,
not me.
You didn't wear your.
That must be a different race number. There must be a mix up here.
You didn't wear like an Iron Man singlet on there to tell everybody who you were.
God.
Saw a couple of those out there. That was crazy. You know, so one interesting like social commentary moment from the TCM start was, so when I'm up and you could see this from your standpoint, but I'm on the stage at the starting point and it's my job to, you know, to kind of be the voice of and communicate all the information. So there is a funnel of attention that comes to the stage and the pressure of that is one thing, but the people that end up coming up on the stage, there's three key people. So you have Dean Orton, who's the president of TCM, Twin Cities Emotion. You had Emily, who was the vice president of Medtronic.
I think she was president of her division.
She could have been.
You said VP, and then she got
on. VP of the whole thing.
I'm the president. I was like, so Chris is going to get.
I was reading copy.
Chris is in trouble.
I was reading
Chris
copy.
Chris is in trouble.
I should have been more in trouble when I said thank you for Medtronic for creating the heart appliance that my father had put in, which she quietly came up to me and whispered, "That's a Boston Science." She goes, "We were all laughing, and we thank you for your attention. We really appreciate your, but that's not our product. That's a Boston Science product, but thank you very much." And I'm like, oh, man, you freestyle one thing, and it always goes sideways. But the thing that I got like a little bit of spidey sense was, so the mayor, Jacob Fry, is up there, and, you know, he's standing next to me for like, you know, 10, 15 minutes, and I for the first time started getting a little bit of like spidey sense going, oh my gosh, could something happen here? You know, because you think about like the environment that we're around and the things that have happened in the last year or and you know, the focus and we're, you know, all the different things. I thought, you know, if anything were to happen, oh my gosh, this is a spot where it definitely could happen. He's out in the open. There's a ton of people, a lot of attention, media there. So if somebody wanted to do something negative, that would be, and I am right there. Like, and so my cop sense is like, I'm looking top of buildings. I'm looking all around and not trying to act like it, but really, you know, just worried.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that's ever happened in my, in announcing where I felt like, wow, this is.
Side of your instinct kicked in.
That kicked in. Like, this could happen. And so I legitimately got concerned at one point in time and kind of pushed through it. But then afterwards, like, reflected on it, it's like, wow, that could have happened. And what would happen if it did? Like, oof. And then does that change what you do? You talk about falling or getting hurt or getting clipped or getting a slew foot. Does that change anything? If something catastrophic did happen, would that change me ever announcing races again or being up in the spotlight again?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's but it was a first. Huh. And luckily nothing happened, and it was a great day, and it was you know, got part of the post race show, which then was, we were cleared out because of the lightning that came on.
Oh yeah. It was such a strange day.
Yeah, it was like a little storm came through, and then Charlie grabbed the mic and was like, okay, I'll tell everybody what to do. And I'm like, all right, fine. He's like, can you guys get out of here? You're done for the day. I'm like, all right. Cause we're all standing like on metal stages in a metal tent around all this. And it's like, you know, well, hey, all of you people in the Capitol grounds, go get out. I'm like, all right, get gone. Cause apparently lightning and metal fences don't work together.
So, well, you got to clock out early.
I got to
same
clock
paycheck,
out early.
Same paycheck. Your hourly rate got better.
Just getting the fat stacks. Just
can
the fat
I tell
stacks.
You, we got to wrap in a moment here, but can I tell you the most foolish part of my day with this whole marathon?
Hmm.
It's a major scrum down by the Capitol.
Yep.
So it's a weird destination to arrive at no matter what,
mm-hmm.
but it's a very chaotic scrum.
Yep.
So our friend Jenna was in town. She was going to come pick me up.
Yep.
Well, we were thinking it through, like, oh, logistically, what's going to be the easiest? There's this little tucked away neighborhood. We've ridden it up many times. I always think of it as kind of like the Belgian feeling hill off of Summit on Irvine there.
Yep. Yep.
So it's like, oh, you know what, Jenna, I'll just come up. You can get there easily from the back end. You can drive there easily. I'll just walk up there and we'll meet there.
Yep.
Well, then I deplete myself completely in the marathon and
that's a walk, too.
It's a 1.2-mile walk.
And it's uphill?
It took me almost an hour.
Oh my gosh.
To the top of the hill. A gentleman is, you know, and I had to stop a couple of times. I drank through my water. And I don't know if it was what kind of heat reaction or dehydration or hyponatremia. I couldn't diagnose what was happening, but I'd overdone it and shouldn't be walking and should be sitting and getting electrolytes and fluids and electrolytes.
Yeah.
And I wasn't. So an hour of just putzing up there slowly and stopping a couple times, and I get to the top of the hill. I don't feel stable enough to walk down the little hill to find Jenna.
Oh, my goodness.
So there's a guy watering his garden. I'm like, hey, sir. I stop and sit running to him. Sir, he's wearing an Iron Man Canada shirt. I'm like, boom, I got in with this strange man. Sir. Would you mind hosing me down? So I have him hose me down. He fills my blue bottle with more water. And we're chatting. I'm like, he's like, oh, yeah, my son did Iron Man Canada. He did Whistler. I was like, oh, okay,
good.
Sir, could you do me a kindness and walk down the hill? And there's going to be a blonde lady named Jenna. Could you just tell Jenna I'm up here, sir? And he's like, oh, okay. And so he goes down. I lay down in his driveway.
Oh, my gosh.
Both of my calves and my legs start seizing up and cramping. So I'm like wrestling the cramps out of my legs in this poor man's driveway. And he's off finding a stranger to come and get me.
Oh, man. All because he's wearing an Iron Man Canada shirt.
Yep. He was the easy target. So he got Jenna. Jenna came up and saved me. And his name is Bill. So thank you, Bill.
Aw, thanks, Bill.
Appreciate it, Bill.
But Bill, you're the guy.
Set a close by pickup point after your races.
Yeah. You need to get something a lot closer. That's way too far. Way too far.
I sowed what I reaped on that one, and that's for sure.
Yeah, you made that decision at the wrong time. You felt way too fresh.
Oh, I can walk a mile. That's no big deal.
Iron Man. All right, we will catch way too much flack and we'll be way too remiss if we don't at least peripherally discuss who we think are going to be your choices in Kona this weekend.
Chrissy Wellington. And I know you're going to bet on Gwen Jorgensen, but I'm sticking with Chris.
I am going Gwen Jorgensen to win. I think she's got it.
Non-starters.
I think she's got it there. No, truly, I've got my 1-2, and it's going to surprise you. I know who I'm going to go with. I'm going to say, yeah, Lucy Charles Barclay is going to be number one, and then Taylor Nibb is going to be right on her, right on the backside. And I know you know I'm a Nibsy fan, but I think Nibsy's going to take it, what she learned last year, and I think she's going to bring it.
I love that. I love both those athletes because they're aggressive off the front athletes. And you always, as a fan of the sport, you always love it when that athlete wins over the more conservative runner who stays in a pack and you know, has a different race experience, just being more conservative, saving all their energy, and then dropping a super fast run. So if Nibsy or Lucy wins, I'm all for it as well.
My prediction is Nibsy's going to take it and come off the bike first. She's going to go out in the run. She's going to lead it, and then the prowess and tenacity and experience of Sir Charles will come, and she'll pass her, and she'll take the win. She's just too strong, too consistent. I don't see anybody else out there that's going to take that.
One of the very few UK athletes I don't despise. So I'll say I support. No, also Garrett Thomas. Don't despise. I like G.
You're terrible.
Happy retirement to Garrett Thomas.
No disrespect. All right, Devin. Well, we need to go rest and recover and let our heart rates get down. I forgot. What do you do for a living and for who?
Sir, I'm a professional realtor. I help people buy and sell their homes, and I would love to serve any listeners of the Be Better podcast. Not ironically, I am actually good at this job.
You are definitely a pro at being a real estate agent or a realtor.
Realtor.
Okay.
It's like triathlon. You add the extra A for no reason. Realtor.
And there is a difference somehow.
There
is a difference. Well, Devin, thank you for coming over, and thanks for not having to go upstairs with me today. We did down the main floor, but for all those out there, we appreciate you allowing us to rest and recover, and we will be back in full form next week. But until then, we just ask that you be a little better.